Welcome to the LTW Fancast with me, Jacob Basford.
And me, Jess Bunyard. Hello, happy new year. We are back. We had what, a 2-week-ish hiatus? So yeah, happy new year, Jacob. How was your Christmas? How was your new year? I know you also mentioned you're into exam period now, so we won't dwell on that too much. Let's focus on the good stuff. So how was your Christmas period?
Hi Jess. Happy New Year. It was really, really good, thank you. It was nice to spend sort of a week or so with my family back down in Hinckley in Leicestershire, which was really, really nice. Quiet Christmas day, which was lovely, lovely meal. Had my pork pie for breakfast, ate my fair share of pork pies over the Christmas period. And I could have ate even more. But that was really, really good. And then my New Year's Eve was really, really chill as well. Obviously managed to go down to Mattie Woods Welford Road for the Bath game, because I've not been able to go there really all season since the Premiership Rugby Cup. So that was really, really good. And then I drove straight from Leicester up to York, and was sort of just saw the new year in with a couple of close mates and stuff, which was really, really nice. But how about you? How was your New Year's? Because you had the full shabam. You had the whole family round, did you not?
Yeah. So the week before Christmas, we had my two nieces, who are 7 and 3, and we did a whole manner of things. We went to the splash park, which is traditional, because my older niece always loves to go to the splash park. So every time she visits, we go there. But we also went bowling, and we also went to meet Father Christmas, which was really exciting, and kind of a really special thing to do with the girls. And then we had my sister and my brother-in-law up, so it was kind of a full house. So my niece's parents kind of were there. They descended. We were all kipping in my parents' house. So me and my partner were in the downstairs area, blow up mattresses, sleeping bags. It was a full house. It was the works. And yeah, my mum cooked absolutely wondrous meals for us all in that period. And I too ate my fair share of pork pie. Although now you mention it, I'm feeling slightly peckish. I think, oh, I could I go for more pork pie? Definitely yes. But yeah, that was my Christmas period, which was really kind of fun and energetic and lively. There was never a dull moment. And then sort of in between the Christmas and New Year period, I got struck down with the bug from hell. So I had a cold over Christmas, no big deal. And then, yeah, I won't go into too much grim detail, but there was a period in between Christmas and New Year where I couldn't even keep the water down that I had just drunk. That was coming straight back out. And so I got very familiar with my bathroom, with my toilet and sink in that period in between Christmas and New Year. That was lovely for me. And I was so ill, in fact, that I wasn't able to make the bath game. So me and my dad just kind of grumpily, well, not grumpily, because it was a great game, but we sat at least a little bit at the start. I was grumpy. I wasn't able to make it. And we sat watching that in front of the TV. And then we had a really kind of chill New Year's. My parents, my partner and I, so just the four of us, we played a ton of board games. That Ticket to Ride board game, for anybody that knows it, where you've got to sort of collect your trains and build paths across America. I really enjoy playing that. So we played that. Yeah, my dad drank some port and was dancing in the living room, and it was a really kind of merry New Year's, which was much needed after that interim period where I spent some of it hugging the toilet.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear. I mean, after Boxing Day, I spent a couple of days down. Me and my parents, we went down to the Cotswolds to spend a few days with my auntie and uncle and my cousin. And we arrived, and my cousin was pretty much over the toilet because he had a bug as well. But luckily, it wasn't anything. It wasn't anything. I think it might have been food poisoning or something, because we never came. No one else came down with anything. But he was quite ill for a day or two as well. So yeah, no, it was a good break. Father Christmas and family were very generous. I've got some tigers tops. So I'm happy about that. What about you, Jess? Any tigers gifts for Christmas?
Yeah, I got a Tigers women's team training top. So one of the black training tops with the sort of coloured cuff on the armband area. And I'm really excited to kind of put that to use when I hit the gym, along with most people in the kind of January hit the gym kind of style. But yeah, I'm excited to use that. And I got some Lord of the Rings memorabilia as well. So there's little like film cells that now are hanging on my wall that I've stuck up, which were yeah a very well received gift as well. So I've got kind of a balance of film memorabilia and Tiger stuff. So it was really good. And I think one of the best gifts that I think I gave this year to kind of toot my own horn, I managed to snap up in the Tiger shop. A signed Julian Montoya Argentine ball that my dad knew that I was going to give to him, but I wrapped that up and I gave that to him for Christmas, because Julian is one of my dad's favorite players. So that was kind of a standout moment for me this Christmas was being able to give my dad that gift. Because for those that don't know, me and my dad go to pretty much every Tigers game ever. So and have since I was about naught. So it was really special to be able to get to give my dad that gift. Yeah, that was something special.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm also, this is where I tell you, Jess, I'm also a massive Lord of the Rings fan. And whilst we could spend the rest of the pod talking about Tolkien's Legendarium, we do have a podcast about women's rugby to do. So I think first up, we are going to review that Saracens game from a couple of weeks ago, and then go through that. And we'll do a bit of a bumper news section because we've got two rounds of PWR results to go through. Looking through obviously big game 15, because that was the, I believe, the third big game in a row where they've had the men's and the women's Harlequins big game at Twickenham. And obviously, because we're playing Quins next weekend, we're going to go through that game a little bit to kind of see where Tigers can specifically focus to try and get that first win of the season, which, given how Harlequins have been struggling a little bit this season in the PWR, that is definitely achievable. Then we're going to be focusing with our player profile on Celia Quanzart, who, if you don't know who she is, because she hasn't actually played for Tigers yet, because she's been suffering with quite a nasty knee injury, but she should be back soon. She is a Team GB Olympics athlete. She represented Team GB in the women's sevens at the Tokyo Olympics. And we're going to be talking about her a little bit because she's a really, really, really interesting person. She's done a great interview with Tigers for the introducing series. So I definitely recommend checking that out. But we're going to be talking about how, like Amanda Swartz in our last player profile, she's another example of a female athlete coming to rugby from a different discipline. Obviously, Celia came from heptathlon. She was a heptathlete before becoming a rugby player. Obviously, she's another player with sevens background. So we're going to be talking about that, about how about the transitions between the 15-a-side and the 7-a-side in the women's game. And also, we're going to be talking about the just wider themes in women's rugby about, because obviously Celia dating Magic Meg, and they're very open about that. So we're going to be talking about specifically about how rugby and relationships in women's rugby is perhaps slightly different, slightly more open, slightly more accepting than the men's game, but by no means perfect. And we're going to talk about how that can be improved in both areas of the game, in both the men's and the women's game. And then linked into that, we're going to be talking about Project Rugby and other sort of initiatives to include participation in the women's game and the game in general for both LGBTQ plus and BAME people as well. So, and then before then, we're going to get really into that Harlequins game at the weekend and preview a massive, massive double header. And hopefully, we can get a really, really good attendance for that game at the weekend as well. So, I'm going to stop talking. Because I've been going on for about 5 minutes. But yeah, without further ado, let's get on with the rest of the pod.
Moving on now, and cast your minds back before Christmas. So before that pork pie and port and booze and turkey was consumed by us all, we're going to review the Saracens game, which I think were covered in positives. I said to you, Jacob, before I hit the record button to do this section, that we kind of scared the unscarable Saris, because they had Marley Packer on the bench, but they brought her on early, which kind of speaks wonders, really. Before we get into that, it's not a pod recorded by us. If I don't do a little bit of scrum nausing, it's just a shout out that Kai May was at flank, as we kind of pointed out on Twitter before the game kicked off. And I know we spoke on our last pod about Tiger scrum and their not inability, but a certain weakness to sustain an initial pressure on engage or even pre-engage. So I'm thinking, because I kind of thought about our decision making to maybe put her at flank, our decision making to maybe move her from prop to flank is to potentially help secure our ability to sustain pressure at engage. That's kind of where my thought process is, but overall, when we talk about this game review, I'm joyful because, as I said, we scared the unscarable Saris, and they brought on the amazing Marley Packer. What felt quite early. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I can remember we because neither of us unfortunately were able to make the game, but we were following it live, and we were sort of texting each other as the first half was going on, like really, really excited because we had started so well. And then obviously, yeah, it was only with like 20 minutes to go, they brought Marley Packer on. That wasn't an injury substitution. That was definitely a tactical one. So that was really good to see. And then back to KMA, I mean, when that team was announced, I think you're right. I think that is about sort of getting that weight behind the props to enable, because there's a lot of pressure, especially when the tight head is pushing on our loose head. Obviously, there's a lot more pressure coming through that. So that was really good, and obviously, you know, she played really well because she was in the team of the week as well. So you know, is that something that's going to be done more long term? Who knows? We'll have to see. But that's something to definitely keep an eye on. But yeah, I think, you know, that end scoreline is disappointing. I don't think we should not forget that. But I think, you know, neither, on the other hand, should we forget how exciting particularly that first 20 was. Because, you know, for context, like we hadn't really had a fast start all season, not from the cup all the way into the league. We have really, really struggled to start fast. So to do that against the league leaders is really, really, really impressive. And that and we know now, we've got the confidence that we can start well, and we've also got the confidence that we can, you know, do a late surge as well. So I think that's going to be really, really great for the team and for the coaches to focus on over this Christmas break, and, you know, as well as recuperate, as well as, you know, be able to, with no game in the last 2 weekends, obviously those training sessions, they've been able to work on things like the scrum, like set piece. So yeah, it's quite exciting, I think, the game this weekend against Harlequins, how, you know, we potentially could be refreshed, and yeah, a fresh slate. So yeah, I think some good signs there.
I had to say, I remember now, as you say it, like excitedly WhatsApping you and thinking, they brought on early, we've had a great start, this is great. And a lot of things seem to click into place that we'd spoken about in the previous pods. I think our lineouts, off the top of my head, felt like it definitely clicked more, certainly from what the information we were getting. There was less penalties in those 20 minutes that we were conceding, because that has been something as well that we've mentioned, and we had a lightning fast start. Now, you, because it was a few weeks ago and we're trying to refresh everybody's memory, you've done like a really amazing run through of scores. Do you want to go through those? Because This is really detailed, and I in no way claim any credit for this. This is all you, and this is brilliant. And I'm gonna challenge people, obviously not if you're driving, but close your eyes, imagine you're at Mattioli Woods Welford Road, listening and kind of this amazing reviews of these tries. Imagine yourself there in the stands.
Cheers, Jess. Thank you very much. I mean, yeah, so obviously our first try, and this was shared on socials. This was nominated for Try of the Week, and unfortunately lost out to one of the Saracen schools, which we will digress at a later point. But we did score this absolutely fantastic try by our very own Fran Michie Wiz. So yeah, I did a little bit of a breakdown. I mean, it's all a lovely set piece move. So, as Jess says, our lineup has actually, to be fair, in the last sort of 3 to 4 weeks, been really functioning very well. So, we've got a great throw in from Ellis Martin. Obviously, still fresh off the good form she's been getting since our interview with her. So, again, Tigers, you're welcome. So she gets a great throw in. It's a pod right at the tail of the line out. So this means that basically all the Saracens forwards are sort of, they have to be pushed to the back, and they're trapped there. So the ball off the top to scrum half Amy Ralph is clean. It's brilliant. We've got a good quick pass to Stash Jones, to captain, and she's standing quite deep from the line out, and because the throw isn't, it's to the back, but it's not quite 15, that means the Saracens defenders can't really rush up that quickly because the line out isn't over. So she's got plenty of time. And outside her, she's got two genuine options for a wide pass. So she's got Talia Brodie at number eight standing quite close to her, but from deep. And then she's got Sagopolo next to Brodie as the wide flat option. So this is quite a common rugby move off fly halves, where like the number 10 will try and pick off two forward runners with one wider running flat and one narrow running deep. Because the pass is off the line out, and because the Saracens defenders are quite far away, there's sort of little threat of Tash being sort of hit early, or you know, so the pass is pretty much on. And to be fair to Brodie and Sagopolo, our two American forwards, you know, great running lines from both, so both passes are on. So, you know, Saracens can't quite mark up. And then the pass goes to Sagopolo, who, of course, is playing at blindside flanker. And then outside of Sagopolo, you've got Magic Meg and McGee have all wrapped round to be sort of realistic options with a pop pass out the back. And then you've also got Sarah Nicholas at 13 sort of standing to the side as well. So that pass out there is already on. Now back to Sagopolo. We mentioned in a previous pod episode on the Loughborough Lightning game, where Jess was talking about the ability of Sagopolo to make these really good pop passes in contact. And I mean, the pass she does here is just simply, it's sublime. It's really, really good. Firstly, with her run, she takes out two Saris defenders, and the ball at the back is wonderfully weighted. I mean, it couldn't have been better. And Magic Meg then does what Magic Meg does and just runs this really great line through the gap that's made by Sagopolo. And from there, it's still, you know, from there you think it's actually, oh, Saracens have actually done really well to kind of cover it, because it's not obvious that Tigers are going to score from this. But Magic Meg does really, really well to get on the outside of the covering defender. And then does a lovely sort of out the back offload to our very own Michie Wiz, who then, even then, when she gets the ball, it's kind of Saris, you know, the Saris defenders sort of trailing back, but she shows really great leg power and pace to get away from the covering defender. So it's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant try, and it's the fast start we have been crying for. And I think what was also really, really good was that this opportunity to play this outstanding sort of set piece move all came from Amanda Swartz getting a penalty turnover. So that was really, really, really good. And obviously, it was nominated for Try of the Week. But I mean, I sort of did a quick retweet when they did the live feed, but before I saw the try, it's kind of like, It's got everything. It's got set piece. It's got a prop doing fancy pop passes. It was really, really, really cool. So, hopefully that score gives the girls a lot of confidence, not only in sort of the effectiveness of our attack play and of our set piece moves, but the fact we scored this caliber of try against a team like Saracens, who, to be fair, despite everything we did, actually did pretty well at nearly covering it. It was only through sort of the class of our play of our girls that we managed to score that try. That's going to give the girls a lot of confidence going forward. So, that's sort of my in-depth rundown of that try. I hope it all made sense. But if you go, shout out to the Sarri's official account, actually, because Saracens have posted a full sort of 8-minute highlights reel of the game itself. I know that PWR do have the highlights of the entire round, where there'll be a 2-minute section of each try. But Sarri's, their official YouTube account, have published a full 8-minute version of the game. I mean, obviously a lot of that is their tries, but if you do want a bit more of a feel of the game, do check that out. So that's the first try. And anything to say on that at all, Jess?
Well, no, apart from I did see it on social media, and it was blooming glorious, really. It was, like you say, it was forwards and backs linked. It was set piece to fast paced. It was kind of everything that you want to see in a try, all the kind of different components of rugby kind of all slotting together, which I think is really exciting. And what made it exciting, I guess, maybe for us to watch, is it was sections of good Tigers performances that we'd spoken about, the little pop passes, Magic Meg, the line out, all of that was linked together. So all of the good bits that we have pulled out of the pod and kind of highlighted in the past couple of weeks, it was all linked together on one try. So rather selfishly, from that respect, I thought it was a blooming wonderful try.
Yeah, I agree, and it was part of our fast start. I think Saracens did respond. They got a 50-20-22, so they got the line out, and then they managed to score off that. But then we scored again, so putting them under a lot of pressure. Really good power to finish from sort of like 2 to 3 meters out. So at that point, it was sort of we were 12-7 in the lead against Saris, and we were messaging each other and thinking, wow, this is potentially something. But then, of course, Sarri's brought on Marley Packer, and as we know, Marley Packer is an incredible, incredible, incredible athlete. Probably one of she's certainly one of the best flankers I have ever seen play the game in both the men's and the women's game. She's just an everything kind of player, and a player of her quality is going to change things for Saris and stuff. So, unfortunately, the game did start to slip away from us, but we never let our heads go down, and we still fought to the very, very end. I mean, obviously, Tess Fury got another try, so she's shown that she's got an eye for the try line. So she got another try with about 10 minutes to go. So, there is disappointment. I think the disappointment for me was that I think we deserved a try scoring bonus point, and to not get that was I think a shame, and that's something that probably the girls will be quite disappointed with. I think that disappointment is summed up by the try that ended up did being a PWR try of the week, which was the second score by Sydney Gregson, which was sort of this end-to-end try, and it all came off from Tigers trying to maul on the Saris 5 meter line, looking to get another try, looking to get back in the game. And then, basically what happens is Marley Packer, being the world-class player that she is, and if one thing she is world-class at, it is niggle and shithousery. She manages to get two players out of our maul, so our maul is a bit depowered. And then we're going to talk about her a little bit later, but the Saracens number 8, Sophie Dugood, she is just a, I mean, to have two all-round athletes in their back row is just insane. And you know, Sophie de Goude can basically do anything. She is really, really talented. So she does a pretty good Harry Wells impression of getting through the mall and managed to get the ball free. Basically makes a line breaking up the field. Looking back on it, the scramble defense isn't amazing. I mean, obviously it is hard when we're sort of like, it is hard to make that switch when, like, you know, we're pushing for the line, you know, we're thinking, oh, we can maul over here, and then suddenly it's, oh my God, they're running up with the ball and they're 20 meters behind. But our cover tackles are a bit too high. I think Donaldson and Co are trying to get towards De Goude, but because they're too high and she has got an absolute shotgun of a handoff, it's really easy for her to sort of shake off those tackles. So we're all over the shop. I mean, to be fair to Meg Jones, she does really well to try and seal it at the breakdown, and she's not too far away. I think if she was a couple of seconds earlier, I think she would have been able to have killed that legally. So, you know, we do our best, but Sarri's, you know, their transition from attack to defense is insane. And they do really, really well to ship the ball out the back and take out most of the Tigers' scrambling defense. I think we'd start to panic up a little bit, and individual players are trying to rush up and close it off. I think on the replay, looking back, I think it would have been better to just kind of just keep the line and drift. And Sarri's are able to use very good hands. The pass to Gregson was very flat, shall we say. But you know, that's what allowed her to beat all the covering defenders and go over for a very, very, very good end-to-end try. And that's why I recommend you watch the Saracens highlight reel, because in the PWR highlight reel, it doesn't show you the Saris turning over at the mall and the De Goude break, whereas the Saris highlight reel does. So that gives us an indication as to what went wrong then. I think, you know, whilst we should celebrate a really good try from Saris, because it is a good try, I think it does kind of highlight the disappointment that really we did deserve a try scoring bonus point from that game, and to not get that, and for Saris to score that try, I think is quite disappointing. And you know, I think that try also showed that we are still, that our defense is improving, our cohesion is improving, and we did do pretty much everything we could. You know, Meg Jones was unlucky not to get a turnover. I think we're still vulnerable. People are still making shots. People are still not making shots. Sorry, people are still running up to try and to close things off, and not working as a cohesive line. We're still a bit vulnerable on the fringes, on either flanks of the defense. So yeah, that's the Saracens try that I've sort of delved into. But yeah, so things to work on, but still a lot of exciting things to build on as well. So I'm sure that over this break, that not only have the girls been well rested and recuperate, but they've been able to you know, delve quite deep into this game and make sure that we're still building and that we can put in a really, really good performance against Harlequins this weekend. But yeah, anything to say there, Jess? Sorry.
No, other than just to kind of finish this review period by saying, yes, definitely some improvements. Absolutely, defense is something we've highlighted in a previous pod. But to force Saracens to panic, hit the Marley button early, and to bring on World Rugby's Player of the Year early is fantastic, and that achievement should not be underestimated.
So, you know, we've been speaking about Marley Packer, and we've mentioned her earlier a little bit as well. But I think we also have to talk about Sophie de Goude, the number eight for Saris. And if anyone doesn't actually know who Sophie de Goude is, I mean, she's talked about in the women's game all the time, and she should be talked about more. I mean, she's an incredible, incredible player. So she's a number eight, and she's Canadian. Both her parents played for Canada's men's and rugby's women teams in the late 80s and 90s. And the awesome thing about Sophie Dugoud, and this is what she did at the weekend, is that she's a number eight, plays like a destructive number eight, and then is probably one of the best kickers in the game. She converts all of Saris's scores, all the penalties, all the conversions. She does that for Canada as well. So she's sort of like, the women's answer to John Eales. But I don't think, and no disrespect to John Eales, but I don't think he was that much of a ball carrier. I don't think he was swatting off players like flies and stuff. So she is a really, really incredible player. And I wanted to talk about her because, yes, I think Marley Packer coming on did change the game for Saris, but Sophie Dugoud was incredible for Saris throughout the entire game. And I think her performance against us shows that potentially for me, I don't know what your thoughts about this, Jess, but I think since coming up to the PWR, I think we are potentially in that back five in the forward pack missing an out and out big ball carrier. And I think that kind of that need was also a reason why Sagopolo was playing at blindside flank. It wasn't just about the scrum. It was also, having sort of that extra ball carrier in the pitch. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I don't mean any disrespect to the women's pack as we have it at the moment. We've got some great players and they're working incredibly hard. And we've got some really, really talented players in our forward pack, but I just think that I think this the performance by Sophie Dugoud and performances in previous weeks. I mean, when Sarah Beckett was all over us when we played Gloucester Hartbury in the Slater Cup, I do think there's that vacuum there. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we spoke about this off recording. And I think I'm kind of casting, and thinking, and what's one of my favorite players for Tigers men's team? Well, it's Jasper Visser. Why do I rate Jasper Visser? Why does everybody rate Jasper Visser? Why does everybody love looking at those videos of Jasper Visser? It's because he can spark a run and energize a team from nothing by smashing through a few defenders. Why did he smash through those defenders at the weekend at the Bath game? Actually, shout out to my dad who pulled the video up for my attention on social media. It's actually because if you attempt to tackle Visa with the wrong body shape, you will pay for it. You have to go in with precise tackle technique. If you get your tackle technique spot on, as shown by, I think it's either the third or fourth Bath defender in, you'll tackle Visa. If you go in with the wrong body shape, height, wrong technique, Visa will brush you off and make you sit down and make you look quite foolish and spark a team. I think when we spoke about defensive stuff and how we were kind of throwing bodies at Dugoud seems quite similar in that if you attempt to tackle her and you haven't got your technique absolutely spot on, she will make you pay for it. I think potentially having somebody that's an explosive prop playing at flank might capture some of that explosive oomph need, make a run from seemingly nowhere and target defenders' ball body positions. I think that's kind of what we need. Whether that's at prop or at flank or at eight, I don't really mind. Obviously, if you're at flank or at eight, you're going to pick that ball off at the base of a scrum and be able to have the space, the time to target some mismatches and poor defending body shapes. As I say, I don't really mind where it is, but we need that explosive type, create something from nothing in the forwards just as well as we have it in the backs. So we've got it from G Wiz and Magic Meg, we know can create something from nothing. But the power that a forward going on a run like Jasper Visser does just seems to kick a team into the next gear. It seems to uplift everybody, uplifts the crowd. I yell every time Visa gets the ball. Apologies to the people that sit around me at Matty Ollywood's Welford Road. But it seems to just uplift everybody and just kicks a team on. So that kind of inspiring run, as well as the chaos and it can cause on the rugby pitch, is something we need. If having Kaiyome at flank enables her to do that off the base of a scrum, or enables her to do that freely, as well as adding that security onto our engage at scrum time, I feel that's really exciting. And I, you know, could we see her at eight, picking off the ball at the base of scrum and having a run? Is that where we'll see her? Obviously, it means we lose her shoring up the scrum, so there's a trade-off. But it might be nice to see, maybe in the second half, you know, after prop replacements, after the pork pie squad have kind of done that rotation, they've come on. If our scrum's looking a little bit sure one game, might be really nice to move her from flank to eight. That would be exciting personally for me to see her pick up the ball at the base of scrum. You know, if she's done her defender's kind of trick with, am I going to do a little tip on pass? Am I going to run straight at you? Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. Then having her pick it up at the base of the scrum and have a run would be really, really exciting. And I wonder how many times now I've said pick it off at the base of the scrum in one sentence there. I reckon I've said it about 52 times.
No, but I agree. And thing is that KMA can play that all round game and still play a prop. I mean, we see it. I mean, you know, the obvious example of that is Sarah Byrne. Sarah Byrne will you know, take you to the cleaners at scrum time, and then will do you for pace and hand you off into the stands on the wing. You know, so KMA can potentially play that role. I think that the thing for me is that, you know, for her to be able to, you know, to be able to do that kind of all round role, does she need another ball carrier? You know, or do Tigers even need another ball carrier in that forward pack, or someone doing the grunt work, someone, you know, carrying it in the tight, doing those kind of things, getting dominance in that area of the game? That's potentially something where Tigers can look to build on from within the squad. You know, players can get to that level, or you know, potentially looking at bringing someone in next season. So that's going to be something that we're going to keep an eye on. That's something that's really, really interesting to see. But that finishes our Saracens review, and yeah, so we should probably get on to some top Tiger times. So you know, we did have speaking of your dad, Jess, we did have a contribution from your dad for top Tiger.
Finally, at last, what are you
I
playing,
know, I
Dad?
know.
Come on. What kind of father are you?
I know. Well, put it this way, he's contributed. Has anyone from my family contributed yet? No. But hopefully, before I'm excommunicated from the wider family, hopefully, a few of my, because I go to the game with my family, and they'll definitely be there at the game on the weekend. Hopefully, a couple of them might be able to stay for the Quins women's game. But obviously, you know, commuting from the Cotswolds to Leicester, you know, doing that at 8 o'clock at night is you know, so no worries if I'm the only one there. But you know, peer pressure. Anyway, cheers. Thank you to David, to Jess's dad, for contributing to Top Tiger Times. And he was also talking about Marley Packer. Bringing on Marley Packer early, was that a reaction to Tiger's apparent success in the first quarter? If it was, and that is my top Tiger time. And yeah, I agree. I think, just going back to Molly Packer, Jess, I don't know if you felt this, but I think the fact that she was named on the bench and then brought on after 20, I can't quite describe how that made me feel. It kind of made me felt that perhaps Saris have maybe disrespected us a little bit in the first place, that they were like, oh yeah, we'll put Marley Packer on the bench, and you know, she can sort of come on with like 20, 30 minutes to go because the game will be done, and she can, you know, have a bit of fun and stuff. I think, I don't know, I just And feel free to disagree with me here. I just felt when they did bring her on after 20, I was kind of like I felt kind of I felt vindicated, but also annoyed at the same time that perhaps we've been sort of disrespected a little bit. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't quite feel that we were disrespected. So I think, aha, at last, a disagreement on this pod, because all we've done for the first five episodes is agree with each other. I don't quite feel disrespected. I feel as if, squad rotation is something that in previous years, Sarri's men have done very well. And they've set a bit of a template for that in previous seasons. And I kind of feel that's what Saracens women were doing as well, is just trying to do a squad rotation. It is a long season, especially if you are a player like Marley Packer, you are, England women captain, player of the year for the women's 15s game. You're going to see a lot of game time, so it's really important to rotate players, to look after players. So it was potentially that. It's also an opportunity to say, look, this isn't, with full respect to our players, we're new in this league, so it's not like they're playing Bristol Bears,
No.
so there's let's it's not like they're playing defending champions Gloucester Hartbury, so there has to be some squad rotation, and it was a chance for other Sarri's players to go out there and maybe put a stamp on a shirt and and pressurize some other players for that starting jersey, which was really pleased. If it was me and I was coaching Leicester Tigers women's team, the message is fairly simple. If you see Marley Packer on the bench, it's make Sarri's hit that panic button early, which is exactly what we did. That, if you're a coach, makes that messaging really, really simple. Go out there, pressurize them, make them hit the button early, make them bring on Marley Packer, give them a challenge, make them react to that. Which is exactly what we did do. So if that was the message that Vicky McQueen and the other coaches sent out, that's job well done as far as I'm concerned, because we absolutely did make them do that. I don't think putting a player of Marley's caliber on the bench is any disrespect. I think it's a full squad rotation in recognition of the long season that players like Marley will have. Simply because she is one of the best player out there right now. So it's just a squad rotation, and kind of an example or maybe a challenge for other Sarri's players to kind of step up and show their leadership, because Marley is such a strong leader. Having her is not there is almost a bit of a leadership vacuum. So it allows somebody else to step up to explore what Sarri's women's team are like when Marley doesn't play. But yeah, if you're a Leicester Tigers women's coach, or if you're a coach and you're playing Sarri's and you're seeing Marley on the bench, for me, the messaging is quite simple. We do everything we've planned to do in the week with an added challenge now of make them hit the panic button early. Today, one of today's successes would be make them bring on Marley. Give it the full challenge, which is certainly what they did do.
I do agree with that. And yeah, another sort of top target time we had from Simon Ellingworth, kind of similar theme. He said, "I think the first half showed what we are capable of, and again scoring at the end, demonstrating the desire to compete for the full 80 minutes, says a lot when Saracens have to bring on Packer in the first half. This squad will continue to grow." Absolutely, Simon, can't agree with that more. I think that is, yes, there is disappointment. Obviously, we talked about that we were on their line and then they turned it over and scored that end-to-end try. There is going to be disappointment from that, but we didn't let that moment get to us, and we didn't let our heads drop. And Tess Fury scored that try in the last sort of last quarter of the game. So, we are still showing that Tigers fight. We're showing that Tigers DNA of never say die, and we showed that Tigers fight by the fact that they had to bring on Marley Packer on as well. That, we were being uncompromising, we were being tough, we were playing some pretty gorgeous rugby on top of that as well, which is just, is really, really, really exciting to see. So, and Simon's very right, this squad will continue to grow. And it will. And I think we're going to talk about it a little bit later for our Harlequins preview. But I think the bye week and then the week off has probably allowed Tigers to reset and recuperate, freshen up. It's been quite a demanding start to the season. We had the cup games, and then we've had the Prem games. It's a really good chance to reset, but also give us that time to work on aspects of the game that will allow us to give it a really go at Quinns this weekend on Saturday at Matty Le Woods Welford Road. So yeah, thank you, Simon. Thank you, David. Thank you to Jester for your top Tiger times. I do really need to record that so I don't have to keep doing it. But thus really that brings an end to our full review of the Saracens game. And on to our news section.
Yes, so imagine me shuffling imaginary papers at my desk. I am actually at my desk. Jacob is shuffling papers for those that can't see, which is
I'm
everything.
surrounded by exam materials, so I can shuffle that.
Oh no, that sounds daunting. But to distract from the exam scares, we have the news section. And it's a bumper. I feel like we say bumper every week. We're going to need to now listen back, challenge for our listeners, and count how many times me and Jacob say the word bumper in each pod, because I reckon it's an average of 5 per episode. But I've got 2 rounds of PWR results to go through. So I'll start off with the first round of results. These all took place on Saturday, the 16th of December. So the same day that we played Saris at home. Here are the results. Sale Sharks 12, Loughborough Lightning 24, Exeter 27, Gloucester Hartbury 31, Bristol Bears 41, Trailfinders 17. And now for the more recent round of results, which sort of was split because of the big game 15. So some took place before Christmas, some took place after Christmas. So these are the results from the 22nd, 23rd, and 30th of December. Trailfinders 24, Sale Sharks 22. It was a tasty game. Saracens 32, Bristol Bears 10, Loughborough Lightning 19, Exeter Chiefs 27, and the big game, Harlequins 19, Gloucester Hartbury 31. Jacob, are there scores which stand out to you the most there? Obviously, for me, we're obviously previewing Quins, so that big game 15 score of Harlequins 19, Gloucester Hartbury 31. Is there, but also that really tight game, just 2 points in it between Trailfinders and Sale Sharks, almost said that correctly, before Christmas.
I think two tough rounds for Sale to lose at home, away to get Loughborough Lightning, and then to lose away to Trailfinders. Only just. I mean, that does sound like a cracker of a game there, but that's two tough rounds for the Sharks women. Exeter Gloucester Hartbury game was a great game by all accounts. I mean, that's a great result from Gloucester Hartbury. They've had a difficult start to the season with two games getting postponed. So to get a really good away win at Exeter, who have obviously had a really good start to the season, shows sort of the champion type of mettle that made them lift the title last season. So that was something that stood out to me. So yeah, a couple of sort of yo-yo results there, but the fact that Saracens again, another big win over Bristol. Bristol have been a little bit hit and miss this season. They got a great result against Trailfinders, but then to lose by that margin, I know it's away, but they've got a good setup. They've got really good players there at Bristol. They'll be disappointed with that result to Saris. But yeah, those are the results that sort of stand out there to me. But I mean, we'll go a little bit more into the big game later, because it was on TNT Sports. I watched it, and trying to pick out where Tigers can maybe target Quins for the game this weekend. But maybe talking a little bit more about big game as an event itself. It was big game 15, but it was the third, if I'm not mistaken, the third big game in a row where they've done it as a double header. Where they have the women play first and then the men. So Yeah, by all accounts, it was. I mean, I watched the game. The game was really, really good. The whole thing as an occasion was really good. They had the DJ Joel Corry play, which was good. I mean, well, I know who Joel Corry is. I don't know if the listeners do. Oh, Jess is suggesting she does not know who Joel Corry is. Yeah, okay.
Sorry, Joel. I have no clue who you are. But most exciting thing for me, I didn't see the game because I was still hugging both the sink and toilet at the same time. Joy. But the most exciting thing that I saw through bleary-eyed was that the attendance set a new world record for a women's club rugby match. So the attendance now. Or the world record now is 16,237, and that was set at Twickenham at Big Game 15. I think the most kind of exciting thing for me is that that attendance world record is still within the target achievable that we could quite easily set at Matty Ollie Wood's Welford Road with some pushing and some growing of the team and growing of the fan base. We know women's rugby has the potential to attract new people to its sport, families, younger audiences, diverse audiences. So bringing those in as well as existing fans, we have the potential to possibly set that world record at home. But I know you wanted to chat about the shirts because we might be right, might be wrong, but this could be the first time we've seen the Gloucester Hartbury away shirt. I think they maybe chose to debut that at Big Game, and there's some kind of circus theme. I mean, I'm looking at the shirt now. It's very, it is a very, very nice away shirt. That I can, immediately if somebody told me circus theme, I can get it. Jacob, do you want to chat about this shirt more? Because it's a really good shirt, I think.
Is yeah, I mean, obviously, it's good to see that, in the for Leicester Tigers women, obviously that the men and the women have a similar shirt. The difference is obviously the men have the white collar, the women have the red collar, and there's different sponsorships and all that kind of thing. But for Gloucester and Gloucester Hartbury, there's different away shirts, and this is the first time that we've seen the circus away shirt. I think because obviously of those postponed. Games, obviously kit clashes, so sometimes I wear the home shirt. But it was a great occasion for that kind of shirt to be debuted because it's at kind of a big game has always been this thing in both the men's and the women's game where it's sort of like a it's a festival, it's a celebration of rugby. And Quins have always had their big game specific shirts and for Gloucester Hartbury to be able to sort of debut that circus theme away shirt because if I'm not mistaken, that's kind of the identity that this Gloucester Hartbury side have, that kind of that carnival circus theme, playing fast paced, sort of keep the ball alive, kind of entertaining rugby. And it's the type of rugby that allowed them to win the top league last year. So that's really good to see. And I think just on big game shirts in general, this is the third big game in a row where they've had it as a double header. The first big game, or one of the first big games where they did this, big game 30 in 2020, 2021, 2022, there was controversy because the women came out, and this was the last year that Adidas did the kits for Harlequins. I mean, over the years, I mean, Adidas have done some absolute stunners for Quins. I used to be always a big fan of their shirts, and actually, to perhaps the disappointment and anger of some fans, I did secretly want one. But in the big game where Adidas was the last big game where Adidas was the kit supplier, the women all came out in these shirts. And they were not good fit. I think they were like men's shirts basically, and it was really, really poor to see. But the fact that at this big game that issue has been corrected, you've got Gloucester Hartbury having their own away shirt compared to the Gloucester men having their own away shirt, which you can purchase. Obviously, we've double checked on the Gloucester website. You can purchase the Gloucester Hartbury away shirt, which is really, really good because obviously we've seen lately the furore around Nike not deciding to release Mary Earps's goalkeeper shirt for ages, which was insane. And when they did finally decide to do it, it sold out instantly, which proved how unwise a decision that was from Nike. So yeah, to have that own sort of to have the men's and women's team at big game have their own identities, have their own kits, with a world record attendance. But like Jess says, that attendance of 16,237 is really, really achievable at Mattie Woods Welford Road, in not the too distant future, I think, either as well. So, that's something that the club can realistically aim for as well. So yeah, I think hats off to Quinns for Big Game 15 for both the men's and the women's game in general. And we will go back to that game more specifically later on the pod as part of our preview when the women's side play Harlequins women this weekend.
So, last up on the news section for me, this is to give a shout out to PWR because this week it was announced that PWR campaign that we spoke about, I think in our very first pod, the Power Differently campaign, has been highlighted as one of the top 10 best women's sports campaigns of 2023 by Team Heroine. So, I think a massive, massive well done and congrats to everybody that was involved in that PWR Power Differently campaign because it was amazing. We said so at the time. So to have it recognised as one of the top 10 best women's sport campaigns of 2023 is really quite an amazing achievement.
Yeah, absolutely. Hats off to PWR there.
So it is time for our player profile. We've returned to the backs, and I don't have the list of facts for you this week, because, as previously mentioned, I shall stop talking about it, but I have been horrendously ill. So Jacob has done all of the legwork on the facts this time, and you have a rundown of facts about our player profile this week. Take it away, Jacob.
Yeah, cheers, Jess. So we've got this thing now of doing sort of two forwards and two backs in a row. So in the last pod, we did Amanda Swartz, and this week we're doing Celia Kranzar. Now, if the listeners are unfamiliar with that name, it is because she is yet to appear for Tigers Women. She was one of our summoned signings, but unfortunately, she did have quite a nasty knee injury last season, which is carried on into this season. I think she is close to coming back from injury, but I thought this would be a good player profile to focus on because well as we'll go into it. So Celia Kranzar is a former heptathlete, so that's where she started off sort of her sporting career, and then came to the game quite late. She didn't pick it up until the age of 21. So she's another, like Amanda Swartz, she's another female rugby player coming to the game after starting in another sport at quite a high level. So Celia was doing trials for heptathlon sort of like 10 or so years ago, and she was at trials at the same time as Dame Jessica Ennis-Hill. So that is a pretty clear indication of how high level an athlete she was in that discipline before transferring over to rugby union. So heptathlon is quite an interesting sport. Obviously, we're talking about figure skating and how Amanda Swartz might have transferred those skills of being elusive on her feet, having footwork, having good hand to eye coordination and balance and those kind of things. And I tried very unsuccessfully to link that to me swing dancing. But anyway, well, sort of, but for heptathletes, I mean, they, you know, so Celia did do a video with Tigers introducing on LTTTV. So I would recommend watching that as well. And she was talking to Stanley about, obviously heptathlon, it is a discipline in which, you're doing a lot of things, you're running, you're throwing, you know, so it requires you to be good at a lot of things, which on the face of it you think, okay, that is quite transferable to rugby because there is a lot of skills in rugby. You're gonna have to do a lot of things. You've got to run, you've got to pass, you've got to jump, you've got to catch, you've got to tackle. If you're a forward, you've got to scrum, you know, those kind of things. But as Celia was saying in her interview in her interview with Stanley from the club, like when she transferred to rugby union, she'd done a lot of running, but all that running was sort of in a lane, you know, running in that lane. It wasn't, you know, using footwork, it wasn't running different directions. So she was talking about how actually on the face of it you think, okay, heptathlon's probably quite an easy sport to transition to, but going from what is an extremely individual team sport, an individual sport, sorry, to a team sport, that is going to take time to get transfer. So yeah, so actually Celia was born and raised in Twickenham in London, so with Twickenham Stadium in right in the background. But she played the game a little bit at school, but didn't really pick it up until she studied at the University of Loughborough. So she's another women's player at the club that has come through, either that has, you know, played or started playing the game at Loughborough, either at the Uni Buckside or for Loughborough Lightning. And it was while she was at Loughborough that she was introduced to Vicky McQueen, who was heading the rugby side at the time. So, you know, she had that relationship with Vicky McQueen before signing for the club last summer. So on the Tigers website, she's listed as an outside back. So her experience of the game has more been in sevens. I think she only really actually, to be fair, I think she only really came to the 15-a-side game coming back to the game from COVID, because obviously during the COVID times there was no, you know, the international sevens game was non-existent. So she, I think, just to get some playing time, she went to Wasps. And I did manage to find some highlights of tries she scored for Wasps. So she's definitely very fast, and she's got good footwork, and she's got good upper body strength as well. She's got quite, you know, from that heptathlon, from all sort of the shot put throwings and javelin throws, that kind of thing. She's got very strong handoffs in both hands as well. So that's quite exciting if we do get to see her soon in a Tigers jersey. So yeah, I mean, that's probably something we can talk a little bit more, Jess, about sort of the transitioning from sevens to 15s, doing both. You know, the skill sets that you need in sevens are different sometimes from the skill sets in 15s and stuff. And yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Any experience of sevens first? Have you ever played sevens?
Yes, once at Barking Rugby Club in a sevens tournament. So Barking Rugby Club, East London, 1 August, blistering hot, bearing in mind I'm a prop and I'm ginger. So sevens in the summer London heat. I basically was a shade of purple, basically from a mixture of sunburn, dehydration, and just being generally knackered. Yeah, and I didn't really play it like sevens. My coach kept telling me to stay out of the rucks. But that's, you know, that's where all the fun is. So, you know, they're each to their own. But yeah, I remember it was very hot. I was very warm. I got a little bit sunburned. I was very tired, and there was a lot of space on the pitch. There wasn't enough people to hit. The scrums were boring. And I got told to stay out of the ruck. Sevens, probably not really my natural playing sport, but I have been to see it. I was fortunate enough to go to the Commonwealth Games down in Birmingham, where the sevens was being held at the Ricoh Arena, and I went to see that. That was glorious, and we actually sat a couple of rows behind the New Zealand team where all their family was sitting, so we got to see kind of Portia Woodman, and I was like, that's Portia Woodman down there, that's Portia Woodman down there. So I've been to
Is
see
that
sevens.
really cool?
I love sevens as a spectacle. I would love to coach sevens. I haven't had the opportunity to coach sevens yet. I would love to do that. Playing wise, it's not where my natural skill set was, but as a coach, and I love kind of setting game-based challenges for teams, for players. We play a game, so where we learn is best in a game, and I love setting different creative challenges for players and different creative games to stretch them. I would love the opportunity to try my hand at coaching sevens, but yeah, as a prop, I probably wasn't best suited for it. But there's a lot to be said in the skill set of sevens of reading one-on-one body shapes. We spoke about it earlier when we spoke about having great tackle technique and presenting a really good body position to tackle somebody. If you present the wrong body's position to tackle somebody in sevens, you've basically let through a score because it's all about one-on-one defensive and attacking skills and being able to read and manipulate players and being able to do that at a fast pace. So where is somebody's shoulders turning? Where is somebody's hips turning? Is there non-verbal comms? Where are their eyes looking? How quickly can I read you? All of that stuff is done at a really, really fast pace. And we've already proven that ability in Magic Meg and how well she's playing in 15 side for Tigers. So I'm really excited to see Celia do the same and use that natural ability that sevens have of really fast pace reading body types, and reading body shapes and kind of identifying weaknesses and exploiting weaknesses at a fast pace and to see what she can do in the 15-a-side game for Tigers. I'm really excited by that. Alongside the skills that she will bring from being a heptathlete, which has got to be, I think, you spoke about transferable skills and it being kind of one of the best athletic sports to transfer. I think it's also one of the most grueling athletic sports because it's just constant competition, isn't it? And variety and you've got to switch and which discipline are you best in and how can you perform consistently across all disciplines and it must be mentally exhausting. I can't I you know it really must. So that she must have a mental and physical stamina that will undoubtedly help her in rugby in any sport. Having that mental resilience, toughness, stamina, mental awareness, let's say. That I think that as a skill of a heptathlete will certainly do wonders.
Yeah, she did talk a little bit about that in her interview with Stan, as how that kind of the fast sort of day to day sort of doing a one discipline one day, one discipline the next, sort of the really sort of fast paced nature of heptathlon was a really good skill for her to transfer in sevens specifically, because in sevens is very, very back to back. You might play so many matches in one day. Obviously, when she's been playing for Great Britain Sevens, obviously, traveling around the world, and doing packed weekends and then going to another part of the world. It is a, rugby sevens is a sport that requires that sort of focus and that sort of hyper focus over a short period of time. So, that's specifically, and she talked about that a lot, where you can transfer sort of those skills from heptathlon to rugby sevens. Now, obviously, you mentioned Meg Jones earlier in the team, because they both played sevens together. They were both at Wasps together, but they're also partners and they also live together. And we wanted to talk a little bit about relationships and rugby and how that is like in the women's game. Stuff that's unique about the women's game, stuff that's perhaps potentially a bit more accepting and better than the men's game, but where both men's and women's can improve as well. I mean, Celia has talked about this a lot. She's talked about it. She did an interview with David Flatman for World Rugby and those kind of things. So yeah, Jess, I just wondered if we could go sort of, delve into that side of the game as well.
I've sort of written this section as let's talk about LGBTQ plus. So I think as well as the interview with David Flatman, I think her and Meg also did an interview for The Telegraph, which again highlights women's sport within the Telegraph, you may agree or disagree with certain newspapers, but Women's Sport, the Telegraph, does do and continues to do a fantastic job of bringing stories to light, of talking about stories. So they did a piece in there on Celia and Meg. I think it's brilliant that having openly gay players within women's rugby is just normalized. It's just a normal part of women's rugby. Players can either openly discuss their relationships, or they can have a relationship and they can separate their rugby life from their private life. It is absolutely their choice. No one is forced out by a spotlight. No one is outing anybody else. It's celebrated. And it's normalized. There are a few examples. An England kind of Bristol example is Holly Aitchison and Hannah Bottoman, who are in a partnership together. So women's rugby is a safer space for women to be themselves and love who they want to love, stepping outside of the closed circle of women's rugby. Stuff begins to be a little bit more unsafe, and there begin to be perceptions and biases that harm that. And that's before we get to talking about men's rugby, which is still a long way off from where women's rugby is. And I don't have the answers of how we can get men's rugby in a space of normalizing gay players and relationships and openly gay relationships in the way that women's rugby does. I don't know how we get there, but there is still more work to be done within the space of women's rugby and LGBTQ plus. I'm drawing on some research done by Harlequins in partnership with a few others in 2022 and before. And we're talking about Quins a lot because obviously we're doing the Quins preview in a bit, but shout out to the work that Quins do in the LGBTQ plus space, because they do a lot. They've have, I think, annual LGBTQ plus pride themed games. I think the next pride themed game you said to me is against Tigers Men that Quins are hosting. So there'll actually be a pride themed fixture featuring Tigers, which is great. But research done by Quins in 2022 highlighted how much work there is still to do. And I'm going to reel off some quotes that I dug out from online. So 55% of women and girls agreed that many women feel unwelcome to play rugby because of the jokes and negative language some people use about women. 37% heard homophobic slurs at their club in the last year, and 59% heard sexist slurs and negative jokes about women. That one I find particularly unsettling, because that's at a grassroots club. That's at your local club, or it could be at your Quins club down for a game. But that speaks about how we need to do more work collectively, men's and women's rugby, to make spaces better. The next one is also about clubs, is equally unsettling. 15% reported that they had been the victim of verbal homophobic abuse at their club. And 88% said that people often incorrectly assume that they are lesbians because they want to play rugby. So there's a lot still to be done. I think there's a kind of safety almost bubble within women's rugby. And then you step outside of that, whether that's stepping outside of just playing a match for your women's team and then going into your clubhouse bar, or a social environment. Or whether that's then, playing women's rugby and then going to see a men's or women's fixture at Quins, Tigers, say wherever, and hearing stuff. There's a lot more to be done. And it's not just the responsibility of anybody that is LGBTQ plus to solve all these problems. LGBTQ plus people, what do we do now? How do we solve this? And that isn't how we solve it. It's about everybody trying to work together to make spaces safer. And What I like from Tigers that they do is they put up signs before each fixture about language. So it's displayed on the big screen. Any unacceptable language here, it's unacceptable, da 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 da. What I would like, and I can only really speak for my club experience with Tigers because I don't go to that many away fixtures, but I'd like to see posters of stuff. I walk out of Matthew Lillywood's Welford Road, and the way we go back to the car is we go through Nelson Mandela Park. We walk up. And on the fences of Nelson Mandela Park, I think it's Leicester City Council have started to do campaigns about speaking directly to men about violence and verbal abuse aimed at women. So it's talking about, is your mate not accepting no for an answer? Is your mate harassing a woman on a night out? What do you do? And I can't remember exactly what these posters say, but it's done in really a good way, and they're just there, and these posters exist. I would like more posters like that to call attention so that it's not just this language, abusive language is unacceptable at players, fans, officials, everybody, but actually sometimes examples are needed about what unacceptable language is. And I'm not saying we put slurs directly in posters in bathrooms, but examples so that, yeah, actually, I know that's unacceptable. And not only have I seen that it's unacceptable on the big screen, but there's a poster in the bathroom, and actually, here's a contact or a number of somebody in a stand that I can message to go, such and such, two rows back, I've heard them say this, and I can just anonymously like ping it to somebody, because it takes a lot for, I think, for one person to stand up and go, stop saying that, that's offensive. That takes a lot. But a number on a, displayed somewhere on a poster, is your mate saying this next to you? Is your mate abusing an official? Is your mate abusing a player? Is your mate being offensive to fans around them? Or if you heard this, text this number. It'll anonymously get pinged off to somebody, and it'll get, dealt with, whether that's a steward just being a little bit closer, or a steward tapping somebody on the shoulder, or something that takes it to the next level. And I really would like more pride fixtures as well. Quinn's do an amazing job. They really, really do, but I would like more pride fixtures. Who's to say we can't have a whole Prem and PWR Pride weekend where every one is a Pride thing, and it's really, really shouted about. Prem do stuff, so obviously they display the rainbow on I think some of the referees' shirts. They've done that in the past, and I've been to Tigers games where it's been a Pride weekend, and I've received some rainbow laces. All of that stuff's really good, but I think it's also a collective power of action. Now we've got two world-class leagues in this country with many of the same clubs playing in this league. The power of collective action can do a lot more to really make a stamp against it and to speak out against it, because the fact that, 37% of people heard homophobic slurs at their club in the last year, 2022, this was taken, that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable. 15% of people reported they had been the victim of verbal homophobic abuse at their club. That's unacceptable. We want to make this game welcoming for everybody. This game should is for everybody. If you don't believe that, swivel your head. Get out, because this game has to be open for all. It should be open for all. This game is wonderful and glorious and has brought me so much, brought many so much. But we should be able to visit a club, any club up and down this country, grassroots or elite level, my local club down the road or Twickenham, and be safe in the knowledge that we're going to have a really good experience, whoever you are. Regardless of who you love, of who you fall in love with, of who you are as a person, you should be welcome at any rugby club. And we're not there yet. Women's rugby is this kind of wonderful bubble of acceptance, celebration, normalization. But you step outside of that, and these stats show that things are different. But the more we talk about it on social media, yes, but I just want, collective action. And I think top level clubs can do more than just virtue signaling every Pride Month, to be honest. Now, and that's probably my angry rant. Don't win.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and I think it's about tackling toxic masculinity, and I think that that's a massive part in it, and that's not just in the men's game, it's in the women's game as well, because toxic masculinity affects how people see the women's game, and that's where you see these really negative stereotypes that Celia was talking about with Flats, about how everyone thinks that everyone had this sort of negative connotation of women's rugby, that if you played women's rugby you were a butch lesbian, and it was turning women gay and all this kind of thing, and it's and that's where, and that's why you see these stats, that's why you see people like incorrectly assuming sexualities and using slurs and those kind of things. So that's why we need to be, upfront and tackling these issues head on and those kind of things. So I absolutely agree with everything you say there. I mean, I'm doing I'm doing rugby history for my dissertation. I'm not really talking about I'm not focused on sexuality and masculinity so that much, but I have been doing reading on that subject, and there is reading on that, and there's readings on women's rugby. There's a collection of essays edited by someone called Helene Jean-Charest, that was published a couple of years ago. That's quite interesting, more sort of sociological than history, but again, looking at behaviours and how, women's rugby can be a safe space for LGBTQ plus people, but also that, and I see this at university, in an attempt to appear sort of normative, you see women's rugby sort of try and copy elements of the men's game as well, in terms of heavy drinking culture, and certainly my experience of university life kind of corroborates with that, but that's just not an issue in rugby itself. That's an issue in sport in general, I think, as well. So there's definitely areas of the game to be tackled there. But I just think it's and this is why we're speaking about this with Celia. We're not only speaking about it because it's because we have Celia and Meg Jones in our team. I think we want to make that very, very clear. But it is an example of how, women's rugby is sort of different when it comes to relationships. I mean, even like Dave Ward and Abby Ward at Bristol, that's quite rare as well, to have that relationship of just two rugby players. I mean, obviously Dave Ward is now retired and is now a coach, but that's quite rare as well, as of having having a women's rugby player dating a men's rugby player. So it's quite interesting how, that's also a little bit rare as well. I mean, Celia talked a lot about how, actually, to be fair, her and Meg work quite well, in both the work environment and also being a support network for each other. There are probably a lot of people that doesn't work well, and that's why you don't date people you work with. It's just how things go as well. So, that's what we're going to focus. That's why we've been talking about a little bit that on our player profile, because yes, with our player profile, we want to be talking about the amazing players that we have at our club, and we want our fans and our listeners to get to know them as well. But also using them as an insight into wider themes in women's rugby and in rugby in general. With Amanda Swartz, we were talking about Sweden and how in the women's game, Sweden is an emerging nation, which you don't necessary see in the men's game. So that's what we've been talking about as well. So, but we also, I think, and this is where I'll go back to you, Jess, we're going to talk a little bit now, a little bit about Project Rugby and how PWR could be a similar thing, and how ultimately our players in both the men's and the women's and in the wheelchair side, everyone at Leicester Tigers are role models, and how that can actually have a powerful and meaningful impact.
Yeah, it linked back to something you wrote about when you sent over this profile for Celia, and you delved into this interview that she did with Flats for World Rugby. And we've spoken about the LGBTQ plus topic, and celebrating the fact that we have open gay relationships within women's rugby. But you mentioned she also talked about inspiring young BAME women to Flats. And it kind of recall to me that actually I don't think Project Rugby shouts about Project Rugby enough. So there is a funding pool organization that is called Project Rugby that is led by the Gallagher Men's Prem, and I think there's pots of money and initiatives, and they choose kind of what happens with this community fund, and then each of the clubs take charge as well. So this is kind of Gallagher Men's Prem, Project Rugby, and then the individual clubs' community stuff. And they will do different work with different communities to use rugby, and get people having more access to rugby in different forms as well, which is really, really exciting. Before I go on to state what kind of Project Rugby does, and I've pulled it from the Tigers website, I think the next thing that I would like to see as PWR grows as a league is a PWR community section like Project Rugby. You link with the existing community works that the clubs are already doing, and you hand out pots of money, and the PWR one could just be really simple. It's just grow women and girls, and your project could look like XYZ. That is what I would like PWR to do. Or Project Rugby becomes not just Gallagher Men's Prem, but PWR linked in it. And there's an extra because Project Rugby has done some women and girls stuff. There are they have done some projects on there with women and girls rugby. So I would like some more community action led through PWR slash Project Rugby to look at women and girls, and to it means that more clubs, more regions can take advantage, because Trailfinders, who won't have access to Project Rugby because their men's team aren't in the Gallagher Prem, would get this community pot of funding, which would ultimately help their community work that Trailfinders do. And the links with schools and growing women and girls rugby would help with all of that. So I'll just give you kind of a rundown of what is Project Rugby from Tigers' website. So it's a flagship participation initiative, as I said, run by Premiership Rugby and its clubs in partnership with the RFU and sponsored by Gallagher. It is designed to engage and develop new audiences through rugby and stimulate a lifelong interest in the game. Its aims is to increase participation in the game by people from traditionally underrepresented groups. So these are, at the moment, as its focus is, ethnically diverse communities, people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and disabled people. And the activities, this is where I get really excited, because rugby isn't just the rugby that we see on TV week in, week out. It's multiple forms, and it can be really, really accessible. Activities will consist of accessible formats, including touch and mixed ability. The project aims and outcomes are to change existing perceptions of the game, which is where linking it with the LGBTQ plus, of what we perceive as rugby, ensuring that the game is a sport for anyone, regardless of background, ethnicity, or ability, and championing the core values. It is also aiming to engage and transition new participants from accessible rugby activities onto regular rugby participation. So that might be your Project Rugby activities to a club, for example. Another aim or outcome is to improve overall individual well-being by increasing self-confidence, resolve, reducing social isolation, and improving levels of social connectedness. So, as I say, women and girls was a focus on there. I think a couple of years ago, they had a target to help increase the amount of Muslim women and girls taking part in rugby, which is a really underrepresented group of people at the moment taking part in rugby. That's no longer on there because they're They're looking at these three core of ethnically diverse communities, people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and disabled people, although ethnically diverse communities, Muslim women and girls obviously still fit under that broader umbrella. But I would like to see a women and girls focus in there either through PWR on its own and doing some community work to help that, or connected through Project Rugby. But I don't think that Project Rugby is shouted about enough. I think this is an amazing initiative that spans across all the Premiership clubs, the Premiership men's clubs that we have in this country, and all of this work goes on, and it's just simply not shouted about it. We know the amazing work that Tigers community department does because we see it, you know, week in, week out. If you're there at a fixture, you'll see the community stuff happening. But, you know, I think videos on social media or website pieces or news stories or all of this stuff, because all of this work is going on. And I don't think fans day to day know it's happening, but it's fantastic that, you know, some of the stuff we talk about changing perceptions, or, you know, accessible multi formats of rugby, because rugby isn't just sevens and 15s, and it doesn't have to just be sevens and 15s at a community level. It can be much, much more. It can be touch, it can be tag, you know, it can be mixed ability, it can be cross pitch sevens, you know, it can be tens, it could be the game on RFU principles, it can be a load of things that make rugby really, really accessible and that give people access to the game and all of its wonderful benefits. And I really feel this should be shouted about more, especially if linking with PWR means that some of the PWR stars get to go and inspire more at a grassroots level. So we know Tigers players will be out in the community doing some half-term weeks, and they'll do some coaching at clubs, and we see that week in, week out. But if Project Rugby joining with PWR, or PWR doing its own thing, gives access to a pot of money that enables more PWR players to go and be visible in a community and inspire more people, then that's amazing. Because, you know, the see it, be it phrase is real. If you
Yeah,
see it, you can be it. So let's do more of that.
and that's something that Celia was talking about a lot as well in her interviews about being that inspiration. And obviously, you know, she was talking about, you know, the fact that she settled into to Leicester really, really well. That I think when Tigers opened the big massive club shop, she was there, and she loved how people were talking to her as well as the men's players. And obviously she is the it's her and Andre Pollard that are the promos for the half season ticket, which quickly shout out, if you haven't got a half season ticket and you can get it, do get it. It gives you access to all the women's homes games as well as the men's homes games at Matteo Woods, Welford Road. So, you know, if you are umming and ahhing, this is me heavily suggesting that you should do it. So yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a lot that we can be doing. You know, I'm really proud of the fact that Leicester and Leicestershire is a really diverse and wonderful and amazing place. And it would mean the world to me if we could get people from more of our wonderful backgrounds in Leicester and Leicestershire to represent our wonderful and proud club, be that through the community, be that for the men's, the women's, the wheelchair rugby, you know, all Leicester Tigers side. That would be amazing.
So, moving on to our final section, drum roll please, because it's a double header at home at Mattiolli Woods, Welford Road. It's a London double header. As men's welcome Saris, we turn our attention to Harlequins women. Now, surprising form Harlequins have found themselves in this season. Before Jacob goes into detail, because he was fortunate not enough to be, you know, he wasn't cuddling the toilet, he could watch the big game. So he's going to run you through some of his findings from that. I'm going to run you through the past results for Quins so far this season, because it's surprising. So they started off their season, Trailfinders away, They won that game, so Trailfinders scored 17 points. Quinn scored 22. That was the only game they've won so far this season. It's really, really surprising. Next, they played Sale Sharks. Again, away. That was another close game. Sale Sharks scored 35 and Quinn scored 31. Then they were at home. They played Saracens. They didn't score any points and Saracens scored 31. Then again, they hosted. This time they hosted Exeter. Quinn scored 27 and Exeter scored a bit of a whopping 52. Then they had a bye week because, of course, as we're all aware, Worcester Warriors are no longer in our league. So whenever a team was due to play them, they now have a bye week. Then, as we all are aware, it was Big Game 15, where they hosted Gloucester Hartbury. Quinn scored 19 and Gloucester Hartbury scored 31. So it's really, really surprising to be saying this about Quinns, that they've only won one game so far this season. That Sale Sharks fixture, though, was really close. There was only 4 points in it. So that was a really, really close fixture for them. But since then, it's been a bit of a kind of a sticky, it's a really sticky first half of the season for Quins. And I really didn't expect to be saying that because they've got such quality in their side. I mean, Rachel Burford is playing again in a Quins shirt. Her leadership is not to be underestimated. It's odd, isn't it? I mean, you've written in the blurb here that they won the league in the 2021 season and they were finalists in 21-22, which I think is when Rachel Burford got that nasty injury to her leg. And in fact, shout out to Burf because I know her because I've done some coaching at her girls' rugby club camps that I've coached with Rocky Clark and stuff like that. So shout out to Beth because I know what she's like. Her leadership is really, really not to be underestimated. So it feels really surprising that we're talking about Quins like this. And you'll hear these results and you'll hear the fact that they've only won one game this season. And yes, we have every right to be excited because we're coming off the back of that Saris really, really good performance where we kind of forced Saris to hit that Marley Packer panic button early, and we had that really good 20 minutes. Fantastic. We've started to put all this good work in, and we've had a rest over Christmas. So, yes, let's get excited, but let's not also make the mistake of underestimating Quins, who are wounded but powerful. They are powerful. Jacob, what did you notice when you were watching Big Game 15? Because I was clutching. I was clutching the toilet.
Quinn's been a real enigma this season, the women's side. I mean, there's so much quality in that side. I guess the worrying thing for us is that aside from that Saris fixture, they've still been scoring a lot of points. And to be fair, at the in Big Game 15, Gloucester Hartbury got off to that really good start, and then Quins really got back into the game. The scoreline flattered Gloucester Hartbury ever so slightly. The get in the last sort of 15, 20 minutes, the game got really loose, and like it looked like Harlequins going to score, and then Gloucester turned over, and they looked like they're going to score. Then there was another turnover, and Gloucester sort of got a try disallowed. Gloucester Hartbury, and then they did get another score, which meant the result finished that way. So, Quins for about 15, 20 minutes in that game did look really, really good. But I was really focused on these things to see how they were trying to play and to see what things we could target. So Quins, when they were in attack, they were playing a lot through Bryony Cleal, who is the twin of Poppy Cleal. And is now who's now playing for Quins, obviously after previously playing for Saris. They were really reliant on her getting over the game line. And there was a lot of and they were trying to get over the game line by doing a lot of quick, basically just like KBA, keep the ball alive. But they did that through a lot of quick pick and goes. So it's very, very similar to how the French men's rugby team play of doing quick pick and goes. Which means if you get your technique and clear outs right, you can really keep the defense off us. You can't make them push up. You've got to keep them on their toes. That they can't really slow down at the breakdown, and it's a really really I it's a really really good way of trying to get over the game line quickly, and keep the defense as disorganized as possible. So this is what Quins were trying to do, and they were trying to do this through Bryony Cleal. But obviously, if and to be fair to Quins, their breakdown efficiency was pretty good. But if they do get that slightly wrong, and Bryony Cleal or any other their big ball carriers is isolated, that is something for us to target as well. I noticed in the game that there was a lot of Bryony Cleal was getting involved in a lot of scraps. So is that something we can maybe target? Obviously Quins are under pressure like us. They haven't the you know is there an opportunity to get under players' skin potentially? Their set piece struggled a bit as well against Gloucester Highbury. There was at least two not straight throws because of the pressure that GH were getting by throwing up players in the air. And yeah, they'll try to do these quick pick and goes, but as soon as they try to like play through the backs and through the handling really let them down. And if we get a really good cohesive defensive press, I think that's something that we can do as well. But we've also got to remember that we are playing a really high quality side. I mean, obviously, we're recording at the start of the week. We don't know what kind of team they're going to name, but you read some of the players that they have, and it is frightening. I mean, I've mentioned Bryony Cleal, superstar Shauna Brown is back, but interestingly, and this is. We were talking about this earlier before we press record. She's returned to Quins, obviously having initially retired, but she's now converted to number eight. So it'll be really interesting to see if they keep Sagopola in that back row, and the battle between her and Shauna Brown at eight could be something to really look out for. Also they have one of my favourite players, which is Ellie Kildon, the fullback. The best hair in the women's game, potentially, and one of the best sort of backs in the women's game as well. I mean, she is, despite the fact that Quins have been
Surely
struggling. She...
best hair overall, men's and women's games. Beats Faf de Klerk out the water.
It beats Faf de Klerk, but there's, is it Waiselevu for Fiji? There's one of the Fiji players as the Fijian captain. I can't remember his name specifically, and I don't want to butcher it. But yeah, no, definitely up there. Definitely up there, I think. But anyway, enough about Ellie Kildon's hair. She is an incredible player, a really really elusive, really good tactical kicker as well. I think we've got that's something we do have to watch out for. We can't, she's really good at probably like pinning people back, trying to get 50-22s. Those kind of things. So that's something we do have to look out for. Those are things that I did notice when I saw them playing the big game. They also, I think what's also another interesting thing to look out for is that they operate a similar axis to us through playmaking. So they have a playmaker at 10 and a playmaker in the centres. So they had their fly-off Scott, but they also had Tuima. He was a Red Rose, and she's a really, really good player as well. But it was Tuima who was making the conversions and kicks to touch, and it was Scott that was sort of the playmaker fly half. So that's sort of a similarity to us, where we have Tash Jones and Meg Jones. We've got to come up with a nickname for that, the two Joneses. There's got to be something in that somewhere.
And we're going to throw that out as a challenge.
Yes.
Come up with a nickname for our playmaking axis, Jones and Jones. It's over to you, listeners. How creative can you be?
But the thing that also is worth looking out for is that Scott did come off injured in that game. So it'll be interesting to see if Quins have to make a change there, forcing Tuima into fly half potentially. We'll see how that plays out, but those are some of the things that I think we can target, as well as also focusing on the good stuff that we have been building, specifically our rolling maul and our set piece. And because our line out and set piece has been really good, I think that is something that Tigers should really, really focus on for this weekend. So yeah, I mean, Quins did struggle, but they came back and they do have the capacity to come back, and there is some, outstanding quality in that Quinn side, in both the forward pack and in the back line as well. I noticed that, like the men's team, they quite like to play the second rows on the fringes. So Lochner and Leaney, the two second rows who were playing for Quins in big game, they were, making line breaks on the fringes, being sort of that wing forward kind of role on the edges and stuff. So that's something else to kind of look out for, because I'm, and this is something that I'm going to be particularly focusing on. It's our ability to cover those fringes in defence, where I think we have been sort of has been an area of improvement thus far. So yeah, a lot of areas that we can target, and yeah, I think it's being sensible, but it's being right. Okay, this is it's a wounded Quinn side, and they're still very dangerous, but this is a massive, massive opportunity, and I think we have to really, really emphasise that as well.
Yeah, and we've missed the talent out of the Quinn side, because I realised just as you were speaking that of course they've got Lucy Packer, who's England's scrum half. Yeah, she was, I think she was playing in the World Cup final for the Red Roses. So she plays for Quinn's, and actually I didn't know this. I dug up this well, I dug it up. I got it from the RFU website, but there's a really kind of nice link between Lucy and Quinns, because she plays obviously at the Stoop, which is named after her distant relative, Adrian Stoop. So
Oh, she's related to Adrian Stoop.
she's a
That's
distant
cool.
relative. That, I mean, that's really cool. I mean, you can't, that's amazing for Lucy. But she's also where was he? She was in the squad that made the Rugby World Cup final in 2022, as I said. She was in Simon Middleton's squad for the 2023 TikTok Women's Six Nations, and she was also in the WXV tournament. So again, not a stranger to Meg Jones, obviously, because Meg Jones was down for the WXV. But it goes to show that this Quinn side is it does have talent, which is why it's so surprising that they've only won one game. So it goes to show that if they get things right and stuff starts to click for Quins, they're going to be powerful. But the same can be said of us. We've shown, I mean, you showed when we spoke about that Saris, the score that we did against Saris. I'm going to scroll up on my notes to find it. That when things go right for us, forwards to backs, when it clicks, it really, really clicks, and it sings. So the potential here, it is really, really exciting, and it is a London double header. As I've said, these are two massive games for Tigers. We know the story for Tigers men. We've pretty much got to win every single game, right? We've got to beat Saris at home. Then it's a massive, massive game for Tigers women, because we could get our first win of the PWR. We forced Saris. We pressured Saris. We really, really pressured them. And now we're facing Quins at home. That's exciting. We've got the potential to get the first win of our PWR campaign, of our first ever PWR season. That's phenomenal. So these are two massive, massive games for the club. And I think full credit to the club and PWR and Gallagher Prem and the City of Leicester for working together to ensure that this is a double header, because these two games absolutely deserve to be club double headers. Club double headers, I know I say it before, I'll say it again, different from international double headers. I don't think international double headers work. Club double headers offer a lot of bang for your buck, a lot of value for money, and offer something different than international double headers do. So I think full credit to everybody involved with the organisation of this to get a double header, because it must involve so much work behind the scenes to get this stuff going. You know, I can only imagine I'm only organizing stuff for my women's team and fixture times and kickoff times along with other fixtures and games going on at my club. And that's not Gallagher Men's Prem and the PWR. So it shout out to Tigers and everybody else who organizes these double headers, because your work is unseen, but it doesn't go unnoticed, because you know it when it comes to the weekend and there's a packed out Mattioli Woods Welford Road and we're cheering on the men's and women's teams beating both of the London teams, it's going to be amazing. But yeah, a shout out to everybody, admin, City of Leicester Council, ground staff who have to make the ground perfect for two back-to-back games, security who stay and have to steward two games, and the organisation of that, getting the referees in and out and the referees changing rooms and the logistics organised in that, the kit that goes on, you know, all of the stuff to even ensure there is a double header, and then the work that goes on the day, it's massive. And it's much appreciated, because it's so exciting to have double header occasions like this, and both of these games are so important for the club.
Yeah, absolutely couldn't agree with that more. And I'm just gonna like nerd out a little bit about that fact you did about Lucy Packer being a distant relative of Adrian Stoop. Adrian Stoop revolutionized the halfback position. Like he was one of the main people responsible for sort of having that distinction between forwards and backs, having that scrum half, fly half, like positional play in rugby at the beginning of the 20th century. And that's why the Stoop is named after him. So the fact that his descendant is also playing scrum half and is playing at elite level, is representing her country at World Cups and WXV and that kind of thing is a very, very cool fact. So I love that. That's really cool that you found that out for me, Jess. But yeah, no, this game this weekend is going to be massive. It's going to be a great day. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be at both games. I'm going to be, which is really, really exciting, because I've actually never seen the women play live in the flesh before. So I'm really, really excited for that. My lucky socks will be on, so I'm hoping that my Tigers lucky socks will be the inspiration that both the men's and the women's need to get great results against the London club. So. I'm really, really looking forward to that. What about you, Jesse? You're going to hopefully be making it down.
I will be there. I am no longer cuddling the toilet, I'm very, very glad to say. So I will be there. My dad will be there. And actually, a really nice, it's not really a connection, but we came to a couple or went to a couple of away games when Tigers were in the championship. We went to West Park Leeds, because that's of course really close to me, which is where Ellie Kildon played some of her rugby, who's now playing for Quins. So there's a nice little Tigers connection, probably for me and me only there, that I went to the West Park Leeds game to see Tigers play West Park Leeds. And now Ellie Kildon, who started her rugby playing journey at Keighley, then went on to West Park Leeds, is now playing for Quins. There's a nice little West Park Leeds Yorkshire connection there for me. But I will be there. Yeah. Wrapped up, cheering on, no voice at the end of it. Very, very excited. Glaring at people who dare to leave after the men's fixture, as is my right, I think. Scowling at you if you choose to leave. Hopefully, it's not going to absolutely chuck it down like it did the last double header, and I got
Lots of
absolutely frozen. But wrap up warm. You really don't want to miss this fixture. I'm really, really excited to see Quinn's come to Mattioli Woods Welford Road, and I'm really, really excited to have this double header, because as I say, both games have the potential to mean so much for both sides, so for the club as a whole. And we've shown that we're starting to get all of these little kind of things that we've identified, we're starting to get them right. Line outs, infringements, switching on in the first half, All of those things are starting to build. It seems the only thing left to really correct now is just that connectiveness, cohesiveness in the defensive line, and those one-on-one body shapes that we're presenting at attackers. If we can just clean up on those, it's going to be really, really good. Obviously, if we show the likes of Shauna Brown a poor body shape in defense, she's going to absolutely exploit that. But then likewise, we've got players that can also exploit and take advantage of any mismatches that may happen in Quinn's defense. It's I could this be it? Could this be it? Is it now? Could we be like joining us next week's time triumphant? Could it be? I know I feel I say that every week, but is this the week? It's got to be. It should
Gotta
be.
be. I not. I know we sound like a broken record, but I think for me, the key thing is how we start from that break.
Yes.
If we if we if the players and the coaches have used that break really, really well, and that we're fresh and that we're on it. I really think we could. I generally believe we can get a real result and get our first one of the season. If the thing that worries me is that, we have had slow starts,
Yeah.
and potentially that break might affect that, which is the only thing that does worry me slightly. But I have faith. I am an optimist. I'm a Crumbyite. I'll be there on the terraces, giving all hell and thunder in both the men's and the women's game. We'll also have no voice.
Yes.
We'll be on the hunt for that double header meal deal that Jess found.
Yeah. Oh, now I'm excited all over again because I get to have an in-between game pie. Oh,
Yeah, so
yes. It's the
that's going
little
to be
things.
it is the little thing. So, yes. So, just to clarify for listeners, so. It's this Saturday, the 6th of January. The men kick off because for some reason the men's rugby all now kick off at 3:05 instead of 3 o'clock. I don't know, some kind of agreement with, I think it's something to do with TNT. Anyway, the men's kick off against Saracens men at 3:05. Then the women kick off against Harlequins women at 6 o'clock. So there's plenty of time for you to make sure that you've got the right car parking thing and get some food, and yeah, get back down to both games to see the women take on Harlequins women, which is going to be really, really, really exciting at Matthew Lewis, Welford Road. And yeah, hopefully, I'm praying the weather holds off because it has been awful this week. It was
Not good.
awful last night. I don't know how it was in Huddersfield, Jess, but in
Well,
York, it was.
earlier in the week, my dad had a couple of tiles blow off his roof, so that was exciting. Round about the time that I was getting rid of everything that I had in my body, dad was losing a couple of tiles off his roof. So it's been an exciting week, really. I'm looking ahead at the forecast. See, this is the type of stuff you get on this pod. You don't get the weather forecast on any other rugby pod, probably. Probably not. But here you are. I said it's going to be cloudy but dry. But don't hold me to that because it's a couple of days away. So, but
Yeah.
cloudy. You heard it here first as of recording on Tuesday, the 2nd of Jan at 12:56. It says cloudy yet dry. So there you go.
Let's hope it stays that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, without further ado, thank you for listening to our sixth episode.
Oh, no, you're not getting out that easy. You haven't given me your prediction, and then I haven't lazily thought about mine and then copied yours. You can't get
Oh.
that easy. Prediction time. We've got all excited. You see, you may have distracted me because I got excited about food and I got excited about a pie, but you need to give me your prediction, and then I shall panically, worriedly think about mine. I think it's going to be a close game. I think, like the Trailfinders Quinn score, like the Sale Sharks Quinn score, I think it's going to be within five, and that's all I'm saying. I'm chucking it over to you.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's going to be quite end to end because I think either two things will happen. I think Quins will start fast and we'll get back into it, or we'll start fast and Quins will get back into it. because the results and the games from the PWR this season have showed that both ourselves and Quins are capable of that. So I think it's going to be very, very back and forth. Going to be nip and tuck. And, we're sides that are both a little bit low on confidence, but we have had the break. We'll see how the break helps us. We've got the home crowd as well, and I think that can be a really boost. So if we can be the 16th person, that would be amazing. So I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be I think any team can win it in the last 5 to 10 minutes or last, excuse me, play of the game. So I will say Tigers by four.
Yeah, I'm going similar. I'm going Tigers by five. Yeah,
Cool.
I think unconverted try the difference. I think end to end. I think especially if it stays dry, end to end.
Yes.
And I'd really like it to stay dry. Not just because I'm stay dry and relatively warm, but also because we want to see this end to end rugby. Yeah. So now you've given me a prediction. We can safely say that we've come to the end of recording our sixth podcast. And a quick thank you before we round up, because we checked the stats before we hit record, and all of our previous episodes, so all of our episodes 1 to 5, are now over 100 downloads each, and some are well on their way to almost 200 downloads, which is pretty amazing. So a massive, massive, massive thank you to everybody that listens to us ramble about weather and pies, and also me having an explosive bug this week. Enjoy that, I'm sure. I could go into more detail, but I won't. I shall save you all from that. And I do look forward to seeing all of you down at Matty Ollywood's Welford Road this weekend. It's going to be amazing. Catch us, one of us, if you say hi. We shall wave at each other from across the pitch, because I think we shall be opposite each other, because I'm in the sitty downy seats and you're in the standy uppy bit. So we shall wave at each other, which is exciting. You should probably hear me because I'm quite loud. If you hear somebody in the first half go, "Go, gasp!" at the men's game, that's me from the other side of the pitch, because I get quite excited every time Visa touches the ball. Or, "Yes, Dan!" if Dan does something wonderful in a scrum. So undoubtedly that'll be me. But you catch either one of us if you're going to the game. And I'm now going to hand over to Jacob, who hasn't recorded a Top Tiger Time clip, so he still has to say it, which provides me much joy every single week.
Thank you. So, yes, before I do that, yes, so I'll be in the Crumbie Terrace for both games. So I'll be as you're facing the other stand, I'm just to the right of where the players enter onto the pitch. So you'll probably hear me say "off feet, sir," or "off feet, ma'am," because it's one of my pet peeves. It happens all the time. See, or I'll shout "ceiling off." It's one of my pet peeves about rooks. And yes, I know that Tigers do it as well, because they're gonna do it. All teams do it. But anyway, so do shout hello to me. If you're there at either games, I'll be there on the terraces, giving it a full earful. And thank you so much for all that for listeners for listening to this episode. Thank you so much. We've got 100 downloads per episode. I think that's really, really good. It's really, really heartwarming to see that we're getting these consistent audiences. We're getting these good audience numbers, and that listeners are that we're helping to build the profile of the women's team. And so that's really, really great to see. Thank you so much. Thank you for all the comments, the likes, the reposts, the sharing of our episodes. Keep that up. Do follow us on Twitter at the LTW Fancast. Do give us an email if you want sort of in-depth, if you want to give us in-depth feedback of any kind. So that's ltwfancast@gmail.com. Give us a like and rating on Spotify, or if your other podcast provider does a similar feature, do that for us as well. We're really loving the engagement we're having with listeners. And hope you've all had a wonderful Christmas, and I hope you've had a good start to the new year. And come on, you Tigers, for the game this weekend. And yes, if you are at the game, please do give us your top Tiger time for the women's game against Quins. this Saturday evening. I'm so looking forward to it. Can't wait to see it. And yeah, I'll definitely wave or make sure I can bump into you between the two games, maybe, Jess, and that'd be really, really good. But have a great rest of your week, mate. And yeah, potentially see you on Saturday.
Yeah, and let this be said now, 2024, the year of Leicester Tigers women's team. Let's see what it holds. It's going to be amazing.
Absolutely.